first episode of the Man Makeover podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today we are going to speak about a very essential topic, that is nutrition. As they say, food is the medicine and it is also a poison, taken it in a wrong way. So we'll differentiate how food can be used as medicine and how we can avoid at least 70% of the illness, which is lifestyle related and eating food habit related illness, if we take care of this nutrition part. So today we have Mugdha Pradhan with us. Mugdha is a functional nutritionist and a TEDx speaker. Mugdha Pradhan is a founder of Thrive FNC, a revolutionary health and wellness startup that focuses on reversing chronic lifestyle disorders with evidence-based, science-backed nutrition coaching. Mugdha ultimately envisions healing nearly 1 million people and changing the way they perceive chronic diseases. She also plans to position Thrive FNC as a gold standard in healthcare and a trusted brand valued for its radical honesty and deep integrity. Hey, good evening, Mugdha, and thank you for being a guest on the Man Makeover podcast.
Well, thanks, Akash. It's my pleasure to be here, and I'm really looking forward to this because men's health is something that, women have often come to us with thyroid issues and, you know, weight issues and all of that. But men sometimes really don't know where to go when they have their health issues. And typically, sometimes men's health issues are not even in the forefront, right? Like, nobody even talks about them easily.
Exactly.
There's this entire stigma, like, you don't want to talk about things that are going wrong with your health. Because then you'd be perceived weak and stuff like that, right? Like, just toxic masculinity that also comes in there. So I'm really excited about doing this with you. Thank you for inviting me over, and let's get this on.
I have been actually looking forward for the discussion from the time I actually reached out to you, because there were so many questions that actually came in. There were a lot of questions. Actually, let me tell you, there was a list of 30 questions which I could only put in, squeeze in around 15 questions.
Wow.
So I think it'll be a great time having conversation, and it'll really have an impact on this. We can address all the issues actually which we want to. So let's directly dive into the questions. So you're a functional nutritionist, Mugdha. So just for the can you please differentiate, as in how do functional nutritionists differ from the general nutritionist?
Yeah, we are the opposite of dysfunctional nutritionists. but jokes apart, so functional medicine itself evolved as a field about 22 to 25 years ago in the US. The founding people were doctors themselves, conventional medicine doctors in the US, either people who were in intensive care medicine or surgeons, who were getting cases of people in extreme end of life scenarios, right? Where they needed dialysis or where they needed ventilators, and from conditions that were preventable. So a lot of these doctors, so there's Dr. Jeffrey Bland, Dr. Mark Hyman, Dr. Amy Myers, Dr. Terry Walsh, all of these were really the pioneers. And what they did was they asked this one very important question. Why is this happening, right? Why is this body going into this state where it needs a machine now to help it survive, right? So that why then led them to question, because see, when you're born, you're absolutely functional, right? So why is it that the body starts degenerating and breaking down? So then that why led them to ask the question, when does this begin, right? So at what point does this begin? And then it led to the question that if we can find at what point it begins, can we prevent it from happening? And how do we find out that this has begun? So that led to the entire science of trying to understand your body's internal mechanisms even before external symptoms manifested. And that was done primarily through blood tests. So what we practice, when I say functional nutrition, it's basically using the same philosophy, the tenets of functional medicine, and applying it for nutrition and working on chronic disease reversal using that. So if anyone comes to us, whether they come with diabetes, whether they come with high BP, whether they come with erectile dysfunction, it really doesn't matter what health problem they come to us with. The question we ask is, why is this body manifesting this disease? And where can we find the answer? And the answer, more often than not, is always in the blood test, because that gives us so much data and so many insights into what's happening, right? diabetes can simply happen because of a chromium deficiency, or it can happen because of insulin resistance, or it can happen because there's a cortisol, like I'll get technical, but stop me if it becomes too tech. But it can happen because of any of these reasons, right? Now, if you go to a regular nutritionist, they're just going to look at your carbs and they're going to say, cut down sugar and, like, you know, don't eat so many carbs, don't eat white rice. So they'll just give you a generic thing, right? Which is not bad on its own, but it's not really the answer, because why is your body creating diabetes is extremely unique to your body, your genes, the environment that you were brought up in, the toxins you were exposed to. So this entire concept of what we call as bio-individuality.
Okay.
So even your identical twin might not have the same health issues that you might have.
Okay.
Even if your genes are the same, because your environment.
I was just about to ask about my parents' number, then you directly told an identical twin. Then I thought everyone is unique.
Everyone is, right. So my sister and I, we have completely different makeup, right? Like, because I have an older sister. Okay. Even though our parents are the same, and we apparently have the same DNA, still her health issues are different from what were presented in my body, because her environment, what she was exposed to as she was growing up, was different than mine. She went to boarding school, so the water she consumed was very high in fluoride. That resulted in thyroid issues for her, which didn't happen to me, right? So such small things in your lifetime can impact the health outcome you have. So as functional nutritionists, we first thing we do is we ask the question why, and we look for root causes. And then we look at the entire thing that could be impacting your health, right? Your entire ecosystem. So it's a very holistic way of approaching how to bring about healing. And there we even look at things like your stress factors, your work. Like, a lot of people have stress that comes in from work. A lot of people have stress that comes in from their personal life, like their relationships and all of that, right? So again, you can't give the same tools for stress if it's coming from different sources. Yeah. So that's the essential difference, that we look for root causes primarily through blood tests, and then we work. So we don't match a patient to a diet. We match nutrition to a person, because what you need is always unique to you. So that's how we do it. We are the opposite of dysfunctional nutritionists.
it's very pretty interesting. What the another thing is this a myth that if your parents have diabetes, is it that even you will have diabetes? Is this a myth, or is it in some form true?
So see, what will happen is you'll be genetically predisposed to a certain disease if both your parents are carriers of that disease.
Okay.
Now there is something called as epigenetics, right? So epigenetics means that your genes and your DNA can carry memories and instructions across generations. And they've seen this with animal experiments, they've seen with humans also, right? So for example, rats that were put through a maze where a certain food item was located, and you know, their offspring that was never in the maze, when that offspring was introduced to the maze, that offspring would know where to go and pick up that cheese from, because the rats had done that so many times that genetic memory got imprinted in their DNA itself. That is at a very low, at a rat level, right? But even in humans, we have these epigenetic changes. So when our ancestors went through famine, right? Like a lot of lower middle class who have now moved into the higher middle class, their ancestors were not really very well off at that time. So they experienced poverty, they experienced famine. So their genes got programmed for storing calories, storing nutrients, and, like, you know, abundance. So that programming can carry forward in generations. So if both your parents are diabetic, there's a very high chance that your genes are predisposed to diabetes, and India is actually the diabetes capital of the world.
Yeah.
But having said that, you don't need to get diabetes if you take care of your lifestyle, because what triggers diabetes in a human body are certain biochemical pathways. So no matter how genetically predisposed you are to diabetes, if you take care of your internal metabolic health, you don't need to get diabetes. Conversely, you could have nobody in the family with diabetes, right? Like, all your ancestors, your parents, your grandparents, extremely healthy. But if you have extremely bad lifestyle habits, right? Like, if you're eating only processed food, if you're eating a lot of food that's fried in refined vegetable oils, if you're eating like Maggi and drinking sodas, you could be the first person to get diabetes in your family. So genetically, no one has programmed you for it, but you created this disease for yourself, and now you'll be gifting that to your future generations. So That's how disease works. Most diseases are like that.
And we learned about the functional nutritionist. When did you get interested in the subject? So what is your story and how did you come about being this?
Yeah. So see, I was always interested in nutrition. Actually, I was more interested in food. Like I really love food. Okay. So I wanted to study something. Yeah, no, but I really wanted to study and understand food more in depth, right? So I picked a subject like for my bachelor's and master's that would help me understand like just what happens to food in the body. So I did my master's in nutrition and this was long ago in 2001. Mm-hmm. And after I finished my master's, the only jobs that were available were like, you know, gym jobs and VLCC and all of that. So I,
as a nutritionist,
Yeah. And I mean, one is like knowing everything you know about nutrition. Second is being able to apply that in this job. Right. And those were like, okay, it was not something I wanted to do. So I went and fought with my teacher also, like, what did you prepare me for? This is not what I want to do. And after about a year in that, I kind of moved into HR. So I decided nutrition was not what I was going to do. I spoke with a few friends and they were like, given who you are and given what you like, maybe HR would be really good. So I went to XLRI, I did HR there. And then I worked with some of the best startups in Bangalore as their HR person. So I was Flipkart's first HR hire. I worked with Sachin and Binny Bansal directly. And I did that for 15 years. Yeah. So I did that. I did startup HR for 15 years. In those 15 years, what happened is I forgot everything I had learned about nutrition. So my own health started like really worsening because see, one is like you were in the corporate world and then like startup HR is a completely different ballgame because it's complete chaos, right? So the stress of that and like my love for food and like even in my personal life, things weren't really so great. I was like in a pretty dead end marriage and you know, I was using food as my emotional support system. So a certain point of time, yeah, most people do that. And see, it's okay. Like food can bring joy to you. Food can bring happiness to you. Food works. Like if you're in a social setting, it helps in like, you know, bonding with each other. So there's a lot of roles that food plays. It is information that's going into your body, but it also has the certain emotional aspect that most of us have attached to. I'm not disregarding any of that, but the thing is like when you abuse anything, right, that's when things go really haywire. So for me, by 2016, I had reached 97 kgs. I was really obese and I had pre-diabetes. I had an autoimmune condition called Hashimoto's thyroiditis where my own thyroid gland was attacking itself. Okay. So I was literally going towards like a surefire early life of chronic diseases and lots of symptoms and problems. And that's when I was like, okay, enough, like, let me do something about it. Like 97 was my, they say like, you know, I'm like just 3 kgs short of 100. I have to do something about my life. And I went back to the world of nutrition. And what happened, I also parallelly went to a few doctors, ki, what is really happening to my health, right? Why is it that I can't, like if I don't have tea, I have no energy. Why is it that I'm crashing in the evenings? Why can't I just like, you know, like I need tea or coffee to stay awake. My brain is not working. So what is really going on? Tell me. Mm-hmm. And they were extremely dismissive and they were like, oh, you know, it's nothing. It must be menopause or some random, like they didn't say, we don't know what's happening to you, right? They were like, don't. You're just like, you know, it's everyone is going through it. Just stress, just deal with it, learn meditation or something like that. Uh-huh. So I was like, okay, doctors don't know jack shit. I'm going to go look for answers on my own. And I went back into nutrition and that's when I discovered, because by then this functional nutrition field had started coming more on the internet and it was becoming available, right? Whatever work these doctors had started doing 25 years ago. So that's when I discovered them. And then I read and I read and I read. I just devoured all the books that were there. I just like I self-taught myself all of these things that helped me then learn how to interpret my own blood tests and figure out what was going on. So my beta test was me only, right? So I interpreted my own blood test and I figured out what was going on. And then I basically fixed my own health. And I mean, since then, like people started coming to me, ki, whatever you did for yourself. Yeah. So it started from there. It started from having to heal myself that I went into this world of functional nutrition.
That's great.
So that's.
And actually, everyone goes through this transformation. Most of my friends, they come and tell, hey, I lost 10 kgs. I lost 15 kgs. But you go and speak to them after 2 years, they're back to normal. they gain back the lost weight.
Mm.
So what is the pill for this? As in, what is the solution for this? Is it natural to body to go back and go back to the its original shape? Or
no?
Okay.
Actually, it's very natural for your body to be in its optimal shape.
So, okay.
Like I was 97, now I'm at 60, right? So I've lost 37 kgs.
Mm-hmm.
I've not gained any of that back. And what happens with most people, why they have this yo-yo thing is they use hacks to lose weight without understanding the root causes. In my case, my excess weight was because of the thyroid, the autoimmune thyroid condition and the diabetes that I had. A lot of people either work out a lot and try to burn fat and then lose weight, or a lot of people do a extreme diet, right? Like they'll cut down on calories and they won't eat at all and they will lose weight. Or they'll do an extreme diet, right? Like they'll do keto. So keto gives really good results in weight loss. But often what I've seen from my own experience and from the patients I've worked with, in the Indian scenario, keto is a very hard one to sustain. Because we have this entire social thing and our palates are used to eating dal chawal and like, you know,
a lot of
kind of in, like or sambar rice or idli or dosa. Yeah. So if you're only aiming to do keto, then you have to be like a hermit who doesn't interact with anyone else, right? In India, we have not been raised to grow, like eat only meat and grow up. So people do these short-term things in an attempt to lose weight without really understanding what is it that was going on in their body and what was triggering the weight gain. Once we work on the root causes and we resolve those, right? Like you pull out the weed, then the plant will grow beautifully, right? But if you don't pull out the weed and if you just keep cutting the leaves on top, that weed is going to keep growing again and again. So that's why people gain weight again, right? Like if you're trying to do exercise to lose weight, it's like you're in a boat that has you know, some holes in it and in the middle of a lake. So that boat is going to keep filling up with water. If you use a mug or a bucket to empty the water, temporarily the boat is going to look like it's emptied out. But the minute you stop using that bucket to empty the boat out, because the holes are still there, that boat is going to fill up again. So that's what happens with weight loss in most cases. People lose weight because they do something, but because the holes have not been fixed, so again the boat fills up and again that weight comes up.
So what is the role of activity or the working out, exercise in weight loss? Is there any credit to it, or you don't even need activity or physical exercise to lose weight?
So see, you need to move. There is no doubt, right? Like we are designed to move. Otherwise we would be trees.
Exactly.
We are not trees. We have hands and feet. So we are designed, our bodies are designed to move. So movement is an important aspect of keeping a human body functional. Okay. That movement can be anything. That movement can be you using the stairs when you're coming home. That movement can be you cleaning
just
up your
day-to-day
own house. That movement can be day-to-day activity.
It may not be.
Will that movement result in weight loss? Not necessarily.
Okay.
Will running on the treadmill, doing cardio kind of thing, will that result in weight loss? Yes, it will, because you're burning calories at a very high rate.
Correct.
Do you need to exercise only to lose weight loss? No. What you always need to do to do weight loss is first, because see, we get a lot of patients who are also old, right? Like we get men who are in their 60s and 65 who've come to us for other problems like diabetes, high BP or kidney dysfunction. They obviously are also overweight. But for them now, their knee joints are a problem, their hip joints are a problem. So we can't really recommend high intensity exercises or workouts to them, because their joints itself will prevent them from doing that. Still, they lose weight. So they do. So what we recommend is move, find a way of moving that you really enjoy. Like it could be rock climbing, it could be rowing, it could be running, it could be walking, it could be cycling, it could be anything. Move as much as you can, but movement is not what results in weight loss. What results in weight loss is always resolving the root causes.
Okay. I think this is a very important input, because as soon as you say weight loss, people start running to gym and buying the gym memberships. Yes. And this is the time actually
now first
out for gym memberships, you know, with all this new year resolutions and all.
So 1st January is like the best day for gyms, because that's when a lot of people make their new year resolutions to kind of lose weight. And then 1st January to 3rd January, the gym is full. And then by 30th January, nobody's in the gym.
Yeah.
So that's how it is.
Yeah. So I'm a strong believer that food is a medicine and it is also a poison, right? So can you help us understand how food can be used as a medicine and when does it turn to be a poison?
Right. So that's like beautifully put, right? Because I'm also a firm believer that food is medicine and food is what heals. And we've seen that in our work in the last 3 years with the hundreds of people we've worked, that food mm-hmm. is literally what heals. Correct. But like you rightly said, food also can harm.
Yeah.
So we'll go to the foods that can harm first.
Okay.
And then we'll come to the foods that heal. Okay. Because the foods that harm, they're not too many. No. You just have to know what to avoid, right? So one is, mm-hmm. see, processed food as a category itself is to be avoided. Anything that comes in a packet, right? All your biscuits and your chips and your bread and your jam and anything that doesn't come from nature.
Yeah.
Like I tell people that if it is made in a plant, don't eat it. If it comes from a plant or an animal, eat it, right? So if it's coming in its more natural form, like eggs, for example, the chicken lays them, you get them. So eggs are okay, right? But if you're going to get like a egg custard or a egg pudding in a tub, then we know that's not natural.
All those preservatives, so like, and all that.
Yeah, or oranges. If you're going to eat oranges, a fruit, it's how many steps did it go through, right? It grew on the plant, somebody harvested it, somebody brought it, and you got it. But an orange juice in a Tetra Pak, this Tropicana and Real and all that, those are terrible, right? So processed food is to be avoided, because what they do is to make sure it is palatable, make sure you get addicted to it and all of that. They add a lot of flavors, they add a lot of sugar, they add a lot of preservatives to keep its shelf life going. So by doing all of this, what happens is...
Just to clarify on the processed food,
yeah.
I understand processed packed food, right? But most of our for daily items also comes packed, like sugar. Do you consider sugar as a processed food?
Sugar is poison only even before it goes to processed food.
Okay. And so what about these polished rice, polished grains?
So white rice, actually what I've discovered is okay. Initially even I used
polished
to
worry rice, that white. Which comes
yeah, from? So white rice. Yeah. So, but see, again, there your source becomes important, right? So if you're getting grains, if you're getting rice and all of these things, then get them directly from farmers who are growing them organically without too many interventions, right? So then they hand pound it and all of that. The minute you buy something that's coming from a corporation, you know a lot of processes have gone into it to making it not so good for you.
All this.
So buy, yeah.
Let me not name the brand. So all these Atta brands and all which comes. You mean to say this should also be avoided. That's what.
Yes, yes. Just buy local, because one is you're also helping your local economy by doing that, right? Like
exactly.
You are ensuring that a farmer who is close to you actually is getting the benefit of the hard work he or she is doing. So I always make sure that I recommend people buy local, because you're boosting your own circular local economy. Exactly. So processed foods, things that come out of packet, I would recommend are a no-no. Like basically whatever you get in a grocery store, right? That's a no-no.
Exactly.
Then the other poison that people should definitely avoid is sugar. Because sugar is what we call a cytotoxic. So it can actually damage your cells. And for your body to deal with sugar, right? Like for your body to process sugar and eliminate it, your body needs so many resources that you get depleted. So magnesium levels start dropping, B vitamin levels start dropping, vitamin C levels start dropping, zinc levels start dropping. So all the nutrients that your body needs for normal functioning, they go in just waste management. Because sugar is a poison. So the body is trying to do waste management. So everything good that your body has is going into waste management, which means you're depleting yourself because you put a poison into your body, apart from the effect that the poison has.
Okay.
Then the third one is all these
the
seed oils.
Sugar then, if people...
You could have organic raw honey. So not these branded big honeys. Yeah. Again, like go local, go to your beekeepers or go to these stores that stock, the small stores. Yeah. So raw organic honey is a good alternative. Dates are a good alternative. Raisins are a good alternative. So you
what
can just make date.
Good. I don't know what we call in English.
Jaggery. Jaggery is basically just sugar in a slightly unrefined form. So my perspective on jaggery, like a lot of other popular nutritionists will be like, jaggery is okay.
Yeah.
But it is the same thing. It's just that one step away from becoming sugar.
Okay.
So it's really a no-no. See, the thing is, anyway, we should limit our sweet consumption to occasions and celebrations. And like, sweet should not be your primary taste. It's not. It's meant to...
The concept of
nature,
having
right?
a dessert after a meal is wrong.
Is wrong, and it happens because of insulin resistance. Again, I'll become a little technical there if I go into that. Mm-hmm. But if you look at nature, if you spend time in a forest, you're not going to get sweet easily. What are you going to get? You're going to see animals that you could hunt, birds that you could hunt. Mm-hmm. You might find some roots and tubers, right? Like these things that grow underground that you, if you're successfully, like if you can dig them out, you'll find them. Or you might see an occasional fruit. That too, there'll be berries. You won't really find these big fruits like trees laden with mangoes and apples and oranges. Mm-hmm. So that is how humans used to live. We used to hunt and we used to forage for our food. And the foods that were most in abundance were animal foods. We were hunters. Mm-hmm. So it was animal foods that were our primary source of protein and calories. Then whatever else we found. And then, of course, agriculture started about 10,000 years ago. And then we learned how to like grow grains and, you know, domesticate cows and goats and all of that. Now, in the last 55, 60 years, this industrialization bought all the processed food. Otherwise, they were not there. Like my grandmother couldn't even recognize some of the things that were coming into the house recently, right? So these things weren't there. So sugar is another poison. So processed food is the first. Sugar is the second one. The third is all these vegetable oils. Now, this is where you might find like a lot of people promote, you know, these cold-pressed oils, like cold-pressed vegetable oils and all that. But they are, all seeds are like poison to the human body. All seed oils. Because what they do is they go and damage, again, your cellular circuit. So they can go and damage your mitochondria, which is a powerhouse of your cell. Mm-hmm. And these seed oils, na, they have like a half-life of up to sometimes 500, 600 days, which means for up to 2 years, they're going to go and become part of your cell structure and continue to do damage. And the reason why we are seeing such an epidemic of diabetes and insulin resistance is primarily because of these seed oils. So if people had to cut out something, na, I will tell them, like, cut out seed oils first, sugar second, and processed foods third. Okay. If you take out processed food, then seed oil, sugar, anyway, in input is come down.
What else? Alternative for seed oils?
Coconut oil is okay. Ghee is okay. So you can see, anyway, fried food is not such a great idea because you're exposing food to such high temperatures and there's a lot of oxidative stress that happens. Okay. If you just need something to kind of cook your dals and your sambars and your sabzis and all of that, then ghee ka tadka or a coconut oil tadka works fine. Mm-hmm. Butter also is okay, right? So if you're not sensitive to dairy, butter is okay. Mm-hmm. So that's my perspective. So sugar, seed oils, processed food. And avoid anything that is genetically modified. So the thing is, like, all these genetically modified foods, right? So every time we eat something, na, it gets broken down, right? So it goes into our body, our stomach breaks it down with acid. It makes it this really kind thing. And then it goes into the small intestine. The small intestine has enzymes that breaks it down. And then it becomes these molecular components, which is amino acids and glucose and fatty acids. Mm-hmm. Now, all of this process, our body is interacting with what we've put into our mouth. If we are putting genetically modified foods into our body, then those genes are not something that our DNA can even identify as food, because that is not what we have evolved with.
Correct.
These are artificially man-made genetically modified foods. So it actually impacts us at a DNA level. Mm-hmm. It can trigger genetic mutations. It can trigger tumors and cysts and all of that. So genetically modified food is a big no-no. And soy, right? A lot of people, especially I've seen men who work out, the ones who are vegetarian, either rely on tofu or on soy protein as their protein supplement. The problem with soy, especially for men, is soy is very, very high in something called as phytoestrogens. So these are plant molecules that exactly mimic estrogen. Estrogen is a female hormone. Mm-hmm. Okay, it's not supposed to be there in men's bodies beyond a certain amount. So if a man is getting such high doses of phytoestrogens, the body thinks it is estrogen and it starts processing that like estrogen. So that's why we see this condition that we call gynecomastia, which, like, that's a clinical term, but basically man boobs, right?
Man boobs.
So man boobs, problems with...
Which said that the maximum number of plastic surgery that has happened last year was to remove man boobs.
Wow. So that's a lot because of these phytoestrogens and estrogen-like compounds that come in from the environment. So soy is a big contributor to that.
And also,
and you know the problem...
Estrogen, that's what I heard. When the chicken and eggs are
yes,
given with these hormones so that
Even dairy, yes. Even dairy. Dairy also, right? So conventionally produced dairy. That's why it's always a good idea to become friends with your local farmers and that community, right? Because then you get access to unadulterated stuff. So but if you buy like...
How can they actually have these arrangements with...
No, now there are... See, even I live in a city. I live in Pune, right? But I have, in the last 3 years, I've spent enough time trying to access these collectives. And there are other people. So... See, one is me, I'm doing this from the health perspective. There are some people who do this from the perspective of helping farmers out. So they create farmers collectives. Mm-hmm. So in fact, every city now in India has collectives of farmers who are like, you know, focusing on organic food and all of that. You just need to know where to go and find them and plug yourself into that ecosystem. And then you'll find them. They exist. And the more we demand this, the more the supply will increase, right? Right. That's the demand supply thing. So if we as consumers start demanding clean food, that no, I'm not going to eat this horrible milk that's coming in a packet that I don't know what it's been adulterated with. Mm. I want clean milk that I can like feed to my child. Then farmers will know that, okay, if I do this ethically, then there is actually a market for this, right? So so that demand supply thing. So for men, especially listening to this, please, please, please do not include soy in your food. It's GMO. I mean, it's genetically modified, besides which it is very high in estrogen. So that's a no-no for most men. Even for women, I ask them to avoid it. And again, like, since you brought up this point of chicken and eggs and dairy, if you can't find, free range and farm-raised kind of chicken and eggs and dairy, then avoid it is my recommendation. Because why would you want to put toxins into your body? Exactly. Why would you want to put external hormones and antibiotics into your body, right? So that's my perspective. So this much, if you avoid, then what can you eat? There's a huge variety, right? Because see, all animal protein, like mutton, red meat is really good. Like a lot of in between, there was this entire thing that red meat is high in saturated fat and cholesterol, and this entire cholesterol myth, right? It's been debunked by the leading specialists.
And also, across the world. The adulteration in this red meat is less, right? You cannot inject them.
It's impossible. Milk. You cannot. And like, see, goats. Cannot be farm raised, right? Like I've spoken to my butcher also. They are roamers, right? They forage and they eat. So you can't keep them in a coop. They're not like cows. You'll just keep them in one place and feed them and they'll be okay. Goats, they'll die. They just need to roam around. Correct. So mutton is really one of the safest. And the cholesterol thing is a myth. Cholesterol is actually a very vital nutrient, so much so that the body makes it if you're not getting it from your diet. And why does the body make it? Because cholesterol is a precursor to hormones. So testosterone, again, which is a very important hormone for men, like everything that creates your masculine features and then the entire vigor and the strength and the vitality that men have, that comes from testosterone primarily. Mm-hmm. And cholesterol is the mother molecule to make testosterone. So if you're not getting enough cholesterol, you're going to be depleted in the raw material that is needed for making your main hormone, which is testosterone. So cholesterol is important. Red meat is good. So red meat, mutton is okay. If you get chicken that's free range chicken that's not been injected with hormones and antibiotics, that chicken is okay. Eggs are okay. Again, same qualifying criteria to that. Beef, unfortunately, is not available in most parts of India, but otherwise beef is also a pretty good source of protein and the kind of fat that our body needs. Now, apart from that, then you have fruits. Fruits, again, if you're getting, organically not grown fruit. Not
genetically modified.
Not genetically modified. Again, look for seasonal fruits, because like if somebody's selling you mangoes in winter, you have to stretch your imagination to think how those mangoes would be there in winter, right? So look for seasonal fruits. Look for fruits that are grown without too many pesticides and hormones. Grains, again, see, different people tolerate grains differently. So some people are okay with grains and like they can digest them without problem. Some people are extremely sensitive to grains and like they do much better when they take grains out of their diet. Okay. So that's again like the entire bio individuality thing, right? Like you will know yourself which grains work. Like for a lot of people, wheat is a problem, gluten is a problem. So the minute they eliminate wheat, they really see a lot of resolution in their symptoms like bloating and gas and everything.
So you need to be aware of what you're eating and then see what is
the reaction. Yes. So the more clean you eat, right, the more you can understand. So like see with processed food, what happens? There are so many ingredients in one item. You won't even know what you're reacting to. Exactly. But let's say today you just ate eggs and rice. You made like an egg fried rice with ghee, rice and eggs. It's three ingredients, right? So you know like which of these is working for you, which of these is not working for you. Most vegetables are okay, except for the ones that are very high in what we call as plant anti-nutrients. So again, yeah, like this, for me to explain this right now will become just too much, but there are articles that are there on the website, on our blog, where we've written in depth about these plant anti-nutrients. So like spinach, for example, has a very high amount of oxalates, which can accumulate in your tissues and cause problems later on. Or all these broccoli and cauliflower and all of these.
Totally avoid these kind of vegetables and this one.
You either avoid them or you use strategies to kind of reduce the anti-nutrients. Like all these legumes, right? So our rajma and chole and all of these moong and all masoor. So see, they are the seeds of that plant.
Yeah.
Through that seed is when the new plant is going to come. So the plant is going to have a lot of defense mechanism in that seed to ensure that its future generations are not going to be impacted. Now these defense mechanisms are chemical compounds. So they're called like phytates and tannins and all of that. If a human eats this, the human can't digest these seeds very well, which is why a lot of people experience gas and bloating after eating things like rajma chole.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you prepare these
properly, with dal also, yeah. some
even with dal, right? A lot of people experience it.
Yeah.
But if you know how to mitigate this, right? Like soaking, sprouting, and fermenting takes away a lot of these anti-nutrients.
Okay.
So then, yeah, so that you'll find on the blog, like it's like we've described it very well. It's basically how to make plant food safer for yourself.
You just tell the viewers where to find this blog.
I mean the website itself. So that's Thrive FNC. That's Thrive FNC, which stands for Functional Nutrition Coaching.com. So Thrive is like, you know, my idea is don't survive, thrive. Like live a really good life, right? So thrivefnc.com, and that's go to the blog section. You'll find a lot of these articles explaining this stuff.
That would help the...
Right? So, yeah. But there's a lot of variety to eat. It's not like we have a limited palate if you take away Maggi and biscuits.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on food supplements, Mumta?
So this has been a question that a lot of people have asked me also, and I'm a firm believer that what nutrients our food can't give us, we really need to supplement. Okay. Vitamin D, for example, right? So vitamin D, our body makes when we are exposed to sunlight.
Yeah.
Now, how much time do you have to be exposed to sunlight to make the vitamin D that you need for the entire day? That's nearly 2 hours in minimal clothing. Okay, so like with your hands exposed, with your legs exposed, then you will make the vitamin D that you need for that entire day, and you need to do this every day. Who has the time to do this, right? Except people who are out on the field, like farmers and all of that. Most of us living our urban sedentary lifestyles don't. And that's why vitamin D deficiency is such a epidemic.
Exactly.
Most people are super deficient in vitamin D. And now with COVID, what we are seeing is the ones who have the lowest vitamin D levels are the ones who are getting the most fatal outcomes. So we are also treating COVID patients, right? Like we are actually helping COVID people recover. So what we've seen is giving them a vitamin D injection when they are experiencing really bad symptoms actually quickly helps them get over the infection also.
Okay.
So vitamin D is a supplement that I recommend everyone must take on a daily basis, but not mega doses. Like a 5000 IU is good enough. Secondly, but, the supplement that I mean,
because this is packed and this is coming from a pharmaceutical company. So
that is where we become very careful about which we are selecting, right?
Okay.
So good quality supplements are essential here, because you can buy something over the counter, but that thing will have so many fillers and it will be really poor quality. The absorption rate also will be very low. So we are very, very critical about the supplements we recommend. And I mean, a lot of time, our research time goes into that only before we even recommend a new supplement.
Okay.
About which one, right? So for example, the vitamin D supplement that we recommend is just like a gelatin capsule with vitamin D in sunflower oil inside it. That's all. There is nothing else in it. So you get 5000 IU of vitamin D from one pill and you're not getting anything else from it. And that brand is a US one. So it's like, unfortunately, we've not found really good brands in India that make good quality supplements.
Okay.
Most of the brands we recommend are US brands. So vitamin D is what I recommend on a daily basis. I also take it on a daily basis. The second one is magnesium. because magnesium was supposed to come into our bodies from water. So when we were like hunter gatherers and all, we would drink water that were flowing over river rocks and like river water. So as water was flowing over these rocks, it would gather some of the minerals from the rocks, and then we would get the minerals that we need. Now all of us have either RO at home, or some, like, even if you don't have RO, the water goes to corporation and then from there it comes into our tap. So magnesium is not there at all in water. And in food also, magnesium sources are very negligible. Like, you don't get the amount of magnesium that you need. So magnesium is another supplement that I recommend.
What are the issues that a person will go through if his magnesium levels are very low? Because we never heard any issues of magnesium level being low and some person facing some issues, right? So I just want to...
So people don't know this. Like, see, these random aches and pains that people have, like suddenly cramp is, calf is paining, or there's a cramp, or, you know, just twitch is happening in the muscle. So magnesium is required for muscle contraction amongst its many other functions. Now, if you're magnesium deficient, this is one of the things that's going to happen. You're just going to get random aches and pains. A lot of people who experience constipation and slow bowel movements, and, like, you know, not so incomplete evacuation of their bowel, that also could be a magnesium deficiency, because magnesium is required even for that. These migraines and headaches that people have, even that could be a magnesium deficiency. A lot of times people experience mental health issues. Like, you should send your blood tests over. But people who experience a lot of anxiety, right? Or people who are going through a lot of mood swings and depression, even for them, because, see, magnesium is also required at a neurotransmitter level. So even they benefit from adding a magnesium supplement in their diet. And overall, so when somebody has like a heart, like even my mom, when she was a heart patient, and she had to be rushed to the emergency room a couple of times because she was having an episode, right? Like a heart attack kind of a thing. And then magnesium is something that they inject. The first thing for somebody who's having a heart attack, it's that vital a nutrient. Like, it's what keeps your heart pumping, like the pace. It's an incredibly important nutrient across the body.
It's very less spoken about. At least I am hearing for the first time.
So that's what I'm telling. What we do is opposite of dysfunctional nutrition, right? So, like, understanding all the different nutrients that a human body needs, and what is the function of that, where is it coming from, and what would a deficiency of a particular nutrient correspond in terms of symptoms and health issues, that becomes really important. So even most doctors don't know how important magnesium is, right? So vitamin D, the fact that COVID people with low vitamin D levels are having a fatal outcome is still not triggering enough doctors to give vitamin D injections or vitamin D supplements. So, like that, then there is zinc, which is another vital nutrient. So a lot of people who are zinc deficient will have low immunity, because zinc plays such an important role in maintaining your immune system. So each nutrient I could speak for 2 hours, So vitamin D, magnesium, and usually B complex is what we recommend to everybody when they come, because most people are low in that. Like, from the blood test itself, we can find out, right? We'll know that the status is low. Apart from that, now, depending on which health condition somebody has, they might need some other nutrients for a short period of time until their body is able to get everything from the food we are recommending for them now. Because if somebody comes to us when they're 35, for 35 years, things have gone wrong, right? So in 3 months that we have with them, we'll do our best to kind of reverse everything that's going on, so that after 3 months, they can sustain on their own without the need for too many supplements and all of that. That's how it
is. You mentioned immunity. And I think people hearing this now, and they've been overheard this word too much after the COVID has come. So can you tell us, how can one improve the immunity levels?
See, immunity is basically a function of your body being able to deal with whatever threats come from outside. Yeah. That is all it is. Whether it's a toxin coming from outside, or whether it is a bacteria or a virus or a fungus, or even, like, sometimes I also tell people that your emotional resilience also is your immunity, right? Like, if somebody is being an...
Correct.
I can't use bad words here, but if somebody is being an asterisk to you, how you deal with it, so how you deal with it also is part of your immune response. Because if you get stressed by somebody else, your body's resources start getting depleted. So immunity is essentially a function of how well can your body deal with external threats. Okay. viruses, bacteria, fungi have been on this planet even before humans came. The planet became oxygenated because of bacteria. Otherwise, the planet was a very high carbon dioxide, methane-rich environment. It's only because some carbon dioxide to oxygen-converting bacteria came. I can't remember their name now. They came and they grew, and that's why this planet became more oxygen-rich and less rich in carbon dioxide.
Okay,
so bacteria have existed right from the birth of this planet. If we are afraid that there is a virus, and you know, it's like this entire COVID fear is basically media
created
making it bigger than it was, because the survival rate for it is 99.95%. Yeah. People have higher death rates in flights, and like, you know, mosquitoes kill more people than COVID does. So anyway, I mean, like, is the hype even worth it is my question. But if anyone ever wants to understand how to really maintain immunity or how to have good immunity, a few things there. First thing is your internal metabolic health, right? So you have to make sure you don't have any underlying disease. So diabetes or insulin resistance or high BP or any of those chronic health conditions will worsen your immunity, because your body is continuously inside only trying to fix it. Na? So bahar se, if some new threat comes, it won't have the resources to fight a war. So first you fix your internal health. Secondly, if at all there is a new virus in town, or if there's a new cold, there's a new flu going around, and you know that, oh, this one got, at that point, if you want to generally make sure you don't contract the virus, or even if you do, it's going to get done in 1 or 2 days, then you can increase your zinc intake.
Okay.
You can make sure you're getting good quality protein, because protein is what the body uses to make everything, even antibodies, your peptides, your hormones, right? So make sure you're getting good quality protein. Make sure you're getting all the micronutrients like iron. So from food only, you don't need to take supplements for this. But like, if you eat liver, for example, right? Mutton liver or chicken liver, you'll get so many nutrients right from that one small thing. Like, it's a supplement in itself. You don't need to take pills also.
But I heard that these organ meat, right? Liver and the other organ meat, they have a lot of cholesterol or the fat in it, which is not good. Is this a myth or what is it?
So organs, like the liver itself will not have cholesterol inside it. Kidney itself will not have cholesterol inside it. Okay. It is covered with fat from that animal's body, because these are vital organs and the body has to protect them even if there's a physical damage. So always around the heart, around the brain, around the liver, around the kidneys, you'll find a layer of fat even in a human body. So the organ doesn't have fat, it's around the organ.
Okay.
The question is that fat even bad in the first place? It is not.
Okay.
This entire myth of high cholesterol, so we've written an article on the blog, people can go check it out, but that entire myth of animal fat is bad for you has to be debunked, because animal fat is one of the, our ancestors ate it, our ancestors prized it. Like if you look at the Eskimo populations, right, they eat whale blubber and they survive, and they have very low incidence of health conditions like that. Like what you see in the civilized world, in the modern world, is primarily because of the influx of vegetable oils, seed oils, and going away from our natural eating patterns, which was eating animal protein and animal fat. So animal fat is not bad. It is okay. So organ meats will give you a lot of nutrients that you need to maintain your immunity. And then there are herbs. So there is this herb that we use a lot. It's an herb called echinacea. Which if you feel like, you know, that first tickle in your throat or your nose, that first sneeze that comes and you feel like this feels like a virus, you take echinacea for 2-3 days. It'll be like, you won't even need it for 3 days. It'll be done in a couple of days.
Okay.
So there are some very potent herbs. And then there are, like, you know, everybody knows about turmeric now, but there are other things also, right?
Garlic, all these are marketed.
Yes. So, yes. Okay. They are to an extent, right? So treat them like medicines.
Okay.
You wouldn't take a crocin every day. You wouldn't take a paracetamol every day. You'd only take it if you got a fever.
Correct.
So similarly with these herbs also, na, oregano and black pepper and turmeric and all of these, if you make any kadha or if you make a tea, take it because you have a symptom that needs that herb's power.
Not as a daily.
Because even these herbs have a lot of anti-nutrients. So turmeric itself has very, very high levels of oxalate. So it's okay to use it as a spice. But if you're going to make turmeric tea 4 times a day and want to have it, it's going to make it worse for your liver. Like there's this trend of curcumin supplements. Now everybody's taking curcumin supplements now. Yeah, so there have been reported cases where people have seen liver failure that has happened because of excess curcumin deposition in the liver.
Okay.
So, yeah, so one needs to be a little judicious, right? Like just because there's a trend happening and just because some supplement company is running a really great ad on Facebook and Instagram and like, you know, some celebrities promoting it doesn't mean you should be taking it. So herbs work for immunity, especially if you have an acute episode of something. The best thing to do is fix your metabolic health, make sure you don't have deficiencies. And then if you need, take supplemental zinc and make sure you're getting good quality protein if you at all get sick.
So you started off telling that you need to reverse whatever you're already having it, like diabetes or IBD.
Right.
So the current medication system, they say that they just suppress it. They give medicines because actually the whole idea is that the diabetes is not reversible. But I saw your TEDx talk and you actually showed a lot of clients who had illnesses and you have already reversed it through this functional nutrition. So can all illness be reversed?
See, the only ones that we can't reverse are, extremely acute conditions, right? Like somebody had an accident and got a fracture. That there is nothing nutrition can do about it.
Right.
But most diseases have been created over time, unless it's a vaccine injury. Like we've also gotten patients, like especially kids, you know, the autism kids on the spectrum, where it's been a vaccine injury that they got vaccinated and that has triggered a disease, right? So either the brain shut off or some kind of flaccid paralysis happened or something like that. That we can't deal with because it was caused by an acute external agent.
Yeah.
But most lifestyle diseases, right, whether it is reproductive health, even things like erectile dysfunction, infertility, we've had so many women who started the program with us and then have conceived, right, while doing.
The problem these days in women is 1 in 3 women are suffering with PCOD. And
PCOD.
A lot of men, 1 in 5 men are suffering with erectile dysfunction. And 1 in 2 men is suffering from premature ejaculation. So
now, this, right, PCOD, we'll talk on a women's show, but the erectile dysfunction and the premature ejaculation both are strongly correlated with insulin resistance and diabetes.
Okay.
Because what happens if you understand the vasculature of the penis, it's loaded with a lot of blood vessels.
Mm.
And what happens in diabetes and insulin resistance is, because of these elevated blood sugar levels for so long, because the body is constantly trying to dump sugar, a lot of the nerves start losing their function. So it's called diabetic neuropathy.
Okay.
And this is also what triggers, because like the erectile dysfunction thing is happening because the penis is not getting sufficient blood supply, right? When the time comes. So that can be reversed if you start reversing insulin resistance. If you fix diabetes, if you fix insulin resistance, erectile dysfunction also can be reversed. Like we work on these cases.
Okay.
Everything else, right? Like high BP, we've taken people off medication. They come to us, they're on 4, 4, 5, 5 medicines, right? Ek BP ki dawai, and then 2 for diabetes and 1 for headache and like so many medicines they're on. And by the end of 3 months, there's 0 medicines, right? Because see, what their medicines were doing, like you rightly said, was suppressing the symptoms. Mm-hmm. So if somebody has high BP, they're taking a BP medicine to keep the BP down.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody has diabetes, they're given a metformin to keep the blood sugar down.
Mm-hmm.
Doctors don't look for why is this person's BP high or why is this person's blood sugar high. That is what we look for. When we look for that why and we find the answer, we start solving that answer. So once that answer is solved, once that question is solved, diabetes is gone because the reason why it was created in the first place itself has been resolved, right? Mm-hmm. So only diseases, like I said, we can't treat are the vaccine injured or the acute conditions or extreme last cases of cancer, like last stage of cancer. Then we can only offer kind of palliative care, right? But otherwise, even we had a 70-year-old man who came to us with Alzheimer's like symptoms, like he was having dementia, he was having forgetfulness. And he said within 3 months, his cognitive abilities had improved because a lot of how your brain functions is dependent on nutrients. And if you get the right nutrition, your brain will start functioning well. If you reverse insulin resistance, that's another layer, like your brain just starts working so beautifully. So every disease that has been created through the way we are living right now.
Lifestyle diseases, to put it.
Not just lifestyle, like even other ones, right? Like, so that's like something that was, that happened to you over time, like not because of your lifestyle, but just because of how your genes were, and it has happened. Even that we can reverse.
Mm-hmm.
So
for young crowd listening here, how can they prevent high BP or this diabetes or erectile dysfunction, premature ejaculation? Is it just by avoiding whatever you told in the first, by all the sugar, packaged foods, and the fruits, unmodified fruits?
Yeah. That itself, Akash, like I am not kidding. The people, you know, think that as they age, they're going to get sick, because that's what they've seen happen to their parents and to their grandparents, right? So they believe that it is normal to get sick as you age. It's just that it's common. Because it's common doesn't mean it's normal. It is not normal. It is abnormal to get sick. Human cells can live indefinitely. They have done experiments where they've put human cells in, you know, nutrient-rich media, which is exactly what the cell needs. And the cell doesn't undergo cell death. Mm-hmm. It just replicates it. It like it continues to live forever. It's called senescence. So you don't need to, like have degenerative health problems. Mm-hmm. How to avoid them is like really, really what you put into your body. Like just make sure it's all clean stuff. See, in the end, the body is like a machine. It's like a very, very intelligent suit. So if you have a Ferrari and if you're putting like what the auto rickshaw guy uses as fuel, that Ferrari is going to like not even start. Right? It's like that, right? So you have to make sure you're putting in the right fuel so the Ferrari continues to remain a Ferrari and not become something else. Now, there are other aspects also that impact human health. So electromagnetic frequencies, EMFs, like our cell phone radiation, the towers, all of that. Like we are like suspended in an electromagnetic smog all the time.
Yeah.
Now with 5G coming, it's going to become even worse.
Even worse.
So that is something that also impacts people's health, right? So one is you eat the right kind of food, you avoid the bad kind of food. I recommend that most people switch off Wi-Fi in the night when they sleep, and you know, make sure that they don't keep phones around while they sleep. Yeah, like keep your bedrooms free of electronic devices as much as possible, because you want, see, that's one of the most restorative phases of your day, sleep itself. So you don't want things that will interfere with repair and regeneration, because we've seen research papers have shown that, you know, being exposed to too much Wi-Fi and too much electromagnetic frequency can open up. So again, I'm going to go a little technical here, but in your cells, you have this gated channel, calcium channels, okay, which is what opens, and that's like how energy transfer happens. In the end, it's electrons. Mm-hmm. So the hydrogen atoms and all of that go. So too much of EMF exposure can actually open up these gated channels, because it's like, it's in the end, it's biochemistry, and it's like, you know, it's going to just receive these fake electrical signals, and it's going to open up a gate when it's not supposed to open up. So I've seen that. So, you know, make sure your exposure to electromagnetic, and people who are listening to this, I'm sure they're very smart researchers, right? You can just go search for EMF impact on health and you'll find out what that does. The water you drink also is important, because if you're drinking water that is, you know, extremely chlorinated or treated with a lot of chlorine, that can impact your thyroid gland. So my recommendations to most people is to drink good, clean, filtered water that's been stored for our day.
The toothpaste that we usually use.
I was just coming to that, right? So the one of the biggest categories of where toxins can come into your body is also from the personal care and household care products that you use.
Okay.
So toothpaste, for example, they have a lot of fluoride. Now, this fluoride is something that can go and impact your thyroid gland, because our thyroid uses iodine to make the hormones we need. Now, iodine, fluoride, chloride, and bromine, they're all halogens. So they look identical to your gland.
Mm-hmm.
So if too much fluoride goes in first thing in the morning, all the iodine receptors get blocked, and your body won't be able to use iodine, right? So when you're using personal care products, and then all these shampoos, right, the fancy ones with all the women with long hair and like waving their hair, all these shampoos have sodium lauryl sulfate, okay. methyl parabens. Most of these are carcinogens, and our skin is like the most absorptive surface. So if you put all of these toxins on your skin, on your scalp, they are going to get absorbed and they're going to go into your body, and then they're going to get deposited in different tissues and cause problems. So personal care products, again, look for really clean brands. I think on our website we've listed this. I don't remember. Maybe we've written about it. Maybe
anything without fluoride and all these shampoos, you said, without sulfates, parabens.
Without parabens, without SLS. So there are some ethical companies making these now. Even in Bangalore, there are quite a few. But look for those. And even when it comes to your household cleaners, right? So these bleaches and these toilet cleaners. I'm not going to name brands here, but all of them are loaded with chemicals. And it just takes 26 seconds for your foot to absorb those chemicals from the surface that's been wiped with those. So use non-toxic products for your household also and for your self-care also. That's one more. So what one needs to do to remain in good health is make sure they're getting the nutrition they need. Make sure they're avoiding toxins from the environment, which is these personal care products and all of that. Make sure they're drinking enough water, because water is literally what moves everything in the body. Make sure they're getting good quality sleep. A lot of people underestimate the importance of sleep, especially the younger generation.
What is the right amount of sleep, as in 6 hours, 7 hours?
I would say 7 to 8 hours is a good amount of sleep.
Okay.
But more than quantity, quality becomes important. Because if you're sleeping at different times every night, so if you're doing like Netflix and chill one night, and then if you're drinking one night, and if you're sleeping at different times every night, your circadian rhythm gets disturbed. So it's important that you go to bed at the same time and you wake up approximately the same time. Secondly, again, with sleep, it's important that it's good, clean, restorative sleep. So sometimes when you drink alcohol, no, you're not getting into deep sleep. It just interrupts with your sleep pattern. So sleep is a very, very important healing tool. Most people don't know how important it is. So sleep, water, the right kind of nutrients, avoiding toxins, and movement, like moving your body, right? I spoke about exercise and movement before also. So just do this much and your body will not go into dysfunction.
Exactly. So you just told about what needs to be done. And you also speak on your TEDx talk, there are 6 root causes, right? You mentioned 6 root causes, which are the root causes for all the diseases. And can you just mention them and then give a small elaboration so that people understand?
Sure. So, what I covered about what you should do is basically addressing the root causes itself, right? So the number one reason why people get sick is if they have deficiencies, like the magnesium deficiency we spoke about, B12 deficiency can cause problems in brain signaling. It can cause anemia. It can cause so many health issues. So deficiencies, which means you're not having enough of the nutrients your body needs, can be reason number one why you could get sick. Second could be you're eating inflammatory foods, or you're eating foods that trigger inflammation in the body.
Okay.
We discuss seed oils, we discuss sugar, we discuss processed food, right? So these are generic inflammatory foods that no human should be putting in.
Okay.
Apart from that, some people react. So we've heard of peanut allergies. We've heard of nut allergies.
Yeah.
Again, gluten, I said, some people react pretty badly to gluten. Even dairy, some people can't digest, right? So don't eat food that is triggering inflammation in your body. So eating inflammatory food is the second reason why people get sick. Third is toxins from the environment. We already spoke of all these toxins,
right? So adulterations in eggs,
all of them, your fertilizers, pesticides, then the chemicals coming from your personal care products, your soap, shampoos, toothpaste, household care products, all the floor wipers and the bathroom cleaners, all of that. So these toxins, if they're coming into your body because they're coming through the environment, these can trigger health problems. The fourth reason is pathogens. Now, COVID ke wajah se everyone knows about viruses, right? Everyone has become an expert in viruses. But pathogens can create health problems. So even before COVID became so mainstream, there's a virus called the Epstein-Barr virus, which we have seen triggers a lot of health problems like fibromyalgia and all of that in people. Even cysts and all of that. So EBV, Epstein-Barr virus, can trigger that. So COVID came now. We've been working with pathogens much before that. A lot of people who have acidity and acid reflux and GERD have an infection of a bacteria called H. pylori in their stomach. So you might be eating the best of the best food. You will not have any toxin exposure. You will not be eating any inflammatory food. But if you have an H. pylori infection, you're going to get acidity and GERD. Okay. So, yeah, acid reflux and all that gas bloating is going to happen. So pathogens on their own can create health problems, even if other things are in place. Same thing with any of these root causes, right? So deficiencies on their own can create health problems, even if you're not exposed to toxins. Now, typically, we'll go to the other two, then I'll go to what happens really in most people. Then the next one is stress itself. Like how you perceive and respond to stress has a big, big impact on the body. And it's one of the aspects that we work on when somebody comes to us for the 3-month program, right? Like, because what happens is if you get stressed even mildly, your body goes into a flight or fight mode. The minute it goes into that, a lot of your resources are depleted. The minute your resources get depleted, you could go into deficiency or some toxin can get an upper hand or a pathogen can get an upper hand. So stress plays a big, big role in why people get sick. So that I spoke of 5, right? And then EMF, like the electromagnetic frequencies, that itself, that can trigger a lot of health problems. Like we've had one case of this woman whose diabetes would be absolutely under control when she was on her farm near on the outskirts of Mumbai. And the minute she came into the city and she switched on her Wi-Fi and, like, you know, the entire electronic smog started, her blood sugar levels would start going up. And there are research papers that correlate this, right? It's not just a one-off case that Thrive has discovered. So EMFs also can cause a lot of health problems. Then these things trigger internal inflammation and insulin resistance and all of that. And those create further health problems. Now, you could have only one of these things affecting you, or you could have all of these affecting you at different levels. You might have a deficiency of one nutrient. You might have two toxins coming in. You might have one pathogen working in your body. Your stress levels might be high. Finish. Disease happens. So that is how disease occurs.
Okay. And finally, while coming to the end of your TEDx talk, you told something about Thrive. I quite couldn't relate much to this, because maybe I never had this Thrive feeling where we work together and we achieve something together, because we all are born in such nuclear families and we are so self-doing. Google karke sab kuch pata chal jata hai, and all this kind of things that I've been brought up. Can you help me understand about this Thrive and how does it help?
So that's my favorite part of what we've kind of managed to do with Thrive, right? Because no one else is doing this model of healing. See, what happened when I became sick, right? Like my initial, the 2016-97 kg story that I told you about, I was alone trying to figure out how do I fix my health, because I didn't want to be sick anymore. And you know, there are so many ups and downs when you're trying to do that, because it's a difficult journey. You're quitting all the things you ate, you're changing your food patterns, you're switching everything. And I was alone and it felt overwhelming often. So I was like, no matter who comes to me, I'm never going to let them feel alone. Okay. So that was the intention that I had. And initially I thought it'll just be me being there for them. But what started happening is, as we grew, right, as the number of patients who came to me started growing, we initially just created one WhatsApp community group for recipe exchange. Okay, I'm not going to eat this thing. So instead of this ingredient, what can I do and make something tasty? Honestly, it just started as a platform for recipe exchange.
Okay.
But what I started noticing is, you know, apart from asking for recipes, people would suddenly post a query on the group that, hey, you know, this happened. Anyone else experiencing this? And even before I could respond, somebody else from the group would chime in. It could be something as simple as, you know, like, okay, I've quit, because there was this girl who was extremely allergic to dairy. So she's like, I quit dairy and my mother-in-law is eating my head about it. What do I do? And I think she just wanted a recipe. But what happened is another lady was like, oh, this is the strategy I use. This is what I told my mother-in-law. I showed my mother-in-law my blood test and she saw that and she realized how bad my health was. And now she's my partner. And say, I was like, wow, what is happening, right? Like, I'm not even helping somebody. Somebody else is helping. And it just grew from there, right? So now we have this community called the Thrive Tribe, which is people who have come to us from 2017 for their own healing. They've come from all walks of life, right? So we have a 10-year-old in the group and we have a 70-year-old. So we have people across all age groups. We have people who are CEOs and we have people who are senior managers, and then we have people who are doing grassroots level farmers work, and everyone is there with the sole intention that, okay, I know you're here because you want to work on your health. I'm going to be part of this to help you do that. So it's a lovely, lovely group. And what people have told me is, see, for the 3 months that we work with somebody, right, we are tracking their progress on a daily basis. They have to fill up trackers and we check what's happening with them. We're chatting with them on WhatsApp. All of that is happening. After 3 months of our coaching getting over, they are on their own, so to speak, to kind of take care of their own health.
Correct.
Because we are not checking them every day. No? We are not asking, why did you eat this every day? So what people have told me is, just because they belong in this community and so many others are doing these great things, you know, they feel like inspired and motivated to continue to be on their health journey. So that earlier question you asked about why a lot of your friends who've lost weight and have gained it back, they do it alone, right? So they do it for a certain motivation. Maybe they want to impress a girl, or maybe they want to like get fit for a event or something like that.
For marriage.
Basically, event is over. Yeah,
for marriage, and after marriage you see the reverse going back.
Because the intention was for marriage, so after marriage then they don't care, because they did it on their own. But when you do it with a community, when you do it with a group of people who are inspiring you, who are doing this on a daily basis, who are having fun while doing it, you know, you kind of want to be we humans evolved in tribes. We did not really evolve in these isolated units that we have now called as nuclear families, right? We and it was because of the structure of a tribe that we could evolve to this point where we could, you know, partner with nature and grow our own food and then become this industrialized society and all of that, because we learned how to work together collaboratively as a collective. Now, that is inherent in our DNA. We love belonging to a tribe. We really do. So this thing of creating a tribe of people who are focused on their health, I call them like the health warriors in Thrive, right? So it just helps everyone then stay in sync and, you know, stay on track. So that's what has happened. And we have seen evidence of models where community was very strong. The aging population there had lesser health issues. Like there's this Okinawa health study, and there's another there. I can't remember the location where there was a chemical spill. Okay, so this entire town, there was a factory there, and it was a very cohesive community. Like they all went to church together and they did things together, participated, like a lot of fun things that the community did together. And there was a toxic chemical spill or something where that happened. Now typically that toxin ka impact is really bad, but because the sense of community was so strong, because they were there to help each other out as a community, they dealt with it much better. And in fact, in COVID now, what's happening is, because of the lockdowns, because of social isolation, more and more people are having mental health issues, right? Because we are not supposed to be like this. We are supposed to be together as tribes, as groups.
Exactly.
So the number of suicides have gone up across the world. Like globally, the number of suicides have gone up because of the isolation people are experiencing. So I found that a community healing model, you know, really made my job as a healer so much easier. And what happens is, like, when you heal from a disease and then you see somebody in your network who's struggling with
suffering
an illness,
from the same thing,
you want them to feel better, right? So you bring them in, like, you know, hey, like, let's do this kind of a thing. So that's how it's grown. And I am in love with it. And honestly, nobody has really understood how to harness this power of a group, a collective, to do something good, right? I mean, people come together for visions, they come together on a mission-based thing, but very rarely do they come together as individuals, you know, on their own journeys, just helping each other out. In like last year, what happened, there was this lady, a lady from Pune in the tribe, her friend who has nothing to do with the tribe, that friend's dad went to Switzerland for a vacation. And he went alone for his vacation, and he went skiing and he slipped and he fell and he had to be hospitalized. Okay, so this has no relationship with Thrive at all. Now this lady, and what happened, because that old man, that uncle had gone alone, he didn't know the local language, and also he was really struggling, like with insurance and whatever travel coverage and all he had. And the family here was sick and worried, like, how do they even reach quickly, right? She remembered that in the Thrive tribe, there was somebody with a Swiss number. There was a lady from Switzerland. So she just tagged her in the chat and she's like, hey, this has happened. Can you please help out? And what that girl did, so she's been living in Switzerland for nearly 15 years now. She mobilized her entire Indian friend circle there. And like, you know, they all went to the hospital and they really helped that old man out completely. And it was like, what was the connection, right? Like, I mean, that man and his son had no connection to the Thrive Tribe except for the lady who was in it, right? So it blows my mind at what happens there. But
now I fully understand the power of the community and the tribe.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, that like one of the reasons why I get so annoyed with what they're doing in terms of lockdowns and isolation and all is like they're taking away this inherent, intrinsic part of our DNA that community makes us a collective species, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's how it is.
I had a great time having this conversation, and trust me, I didn't know that we had. I actually planned this for an hour, and we are over. We have overshot.
Yeah.
No one would think that we have overshot, but this was a great session. Thanks a lot. And
it was a pleasure talking to you, Akash. It was lovely. Thank you for asking such amazing questions, and you can never stop learning. It's an amazing.
Yeah. Thank you, Mugra. Thanks a lot.
Oh, you're most welcome. Chalo, you have a good evening, and we'll sync up later.
You're almost reaching the time of your sleeping time now, almost.
yeah, I sleep early, but anyway, it's worth sharing what I have in
Thank
my
you.
Head.
Thank you for being
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. Yeah.